At this point, several artists got the inspiration to do something with a wealth of poetry being created in New Orleans in the early 1980s. Sculptor Franz Heldner recalls the discussion of these plans with both Maddox and the poet Bob Stock, plans which were hatched, of course, at the Maple Leaf Bar in New Orleans.
And we're all sitting at the Maple Leaf. It was in the middle of the oil bust. And these two guys were being really down. And I said, hey, kids, let's put on a show. You know, let's have a reading. Let's do readings. Where? Here. Oh, yeah, you know, rah, rah, rah. Well, I knew one of the owners very well and talked to him. And indeed, we started it. What does it take to get a bunch of writers together to read their own work? Not much, okay? So it had a life of its own. When I left, Everett took it over and made it become the grand flower, the real crown of local readings that I feel it became. And that was certainly Everett's doing.
People who gathered when Everett read have all agreed that Everett was a gracious host and an utterly spellbinding reader. Again, Franz Heldner.
If you try to figure out how long Beethoven's Ninth Symphony is, I've never been able to. I look at the CDs, I can figure the time. But if the Ninth Symphony transports you and takes you beyond time, you don't give a rat's ass about how long it's taking. And that indeed was the way that Everett spoke. You didn't think about the time, the consideration, the heat, the fact that your beer on the table was flat or anything like that. He could indeed transport. He was an excellent reader of anybody, from Mark Twain, his own work, to you name it.
The readings were held every Sunday at the Maple Leaf, and Everett was paid $20 each week to be the master of ceremonies for them. He taught at a couple places, but these jobs soon ended, and Everett couldn't or wouldn't find work. He was a full-time poet, but other aspects of his life suffered. Fred Kasten describes Everett's life at this time.
It wasn't too much longer after that he basically became homeless, would stay, you know, kind of move from friend to friend for a while. There were a couple other places he shared apartments with people. For most of the latter half of 87 and all of 88, and he was sometimes, you know, just get locked in the bar at night. He slept in the back of a dump truck, which was parked on Dantee Street. Sometimes he was known to sleep on the bench behind what was then the Winn-Dixie at the River Bend. There's a little park there. In fact, one of the great stories is that he actually, I think, woke up one morning using the previous day's Times-Picayune as cover on a bench behind that old Winn-Dixie. And his name was on the society pages of the Picayune that day for having been at a party at the first Tennessee Williams Festival where he was a panelist.
Poet and professor Julie Kane met Everett Maddox at his haunts around Oak Street and the Maple Leaf.
He was funny. He had so many contradictions. You know, he was a man who late in his life was sleeping at the Maple Leaf and, you know, in Steak and Egg and on the steps of the Catholic Church near the Maple Leaf. But if people tried to give him clothes, he would not accept them unless they were, you know, Brooks Brothers and designers that, you know, that were kind of cutting-edge fashion or, you know, or... That was the wonderful thing. You could stop in the Maple Leaf at virtually any hour, the day or night, and have a brilliant conversation. He was always just a, you know, kind of larger than life, vivid personality. The bar people there were all proud of him. They all knew they had something special with Everett there.
Hank Staples is one of the current owners of the Maple Leaf. He was a bartender there in Everett's time and also published his second book, Bar Scotch. In his many hours at the bar, he witnessed Maddox's great memory of literature.
He could quote pages and pages of so many authors just off the top of his head. He really liked Thomas Wolfe, and he'd talk about Look Homeward, Angel, and you might mention some part in the book that you liked, and he'd quote from that section of the book. He did that over and over with different authors and different poems.
College classmate Bob Wolfe was a great friend and appreciator of Maddox's work.
There were a lot of laughs. Some of the poetry obviously was not funny, not meant to be funny, but even so, there was enough irony in it. Well, I guess irony is the best, probably the predominant thing. And the language was just so good. Just an enjoyable thing to listen to. It seemed particularly American, and of course he liked to read. You know, he liked to read in bars, which we really preferred to read. Easier to get a drink there, generally, I guess.
This is for the prettiest girl in New Orleans. Having my first drink of a long spring day at 5 o'clock on the plank patio of this college bar, a gold leaf sky going up behind the fence over the tops of the houses and trees, I find I have a bad case of what Huck Finn calls the fantides. Here, everybody's in accounting. They wear yellow pants and have fat butts. They go beep. If this is English or any other language, I don't speak it. Rodney Jones said East St. Louis was the farthest from home he'd ever felt, but he was never here. A breeze blows the napkin off my table, and I suddenly feel I'm on the deck of a boat in a storm, alone, scared, missing you across town.